Hey, folks, as we approach another critical election, a wave of concern washes over America. Recent studies reveal that an astonishing 56% of our fellow citizens report feelings of anxiety or dread about the upcoming presidential election. That's why I stand with AMAC. AMAC is more than a senior discount organization. During these challenging times, they fight for common sense and hope that our nation returns to traditional American values. Visit amac.us/justnews today to seize an exclusive election year special, a four-year AMAC membership for just $30. That's right, you heard me right, 4 years for 30 bucks. As an AMAC member, you're not only enjoying money-saving benefits, but also the AMAC magazine, free Social Security and Medicare advice, a trusted voice in Washington, and a community of like-minded patriots who love this great nation. Take advantage of this election year special, 4 years for $30, and be part of the solution over the next 4 years. By becoming an AMAC member, you're strengthening a movement dedicated to preserving the principles we hold dear in this great country. Join now at amac.us/justnews. That's amac.us/justnews. Hello, America, and happy Friday. We got a great show for you. We're going to talk to one of the great Second Amendment experts in the country, Amy Swearer. You've seen her. She's at Heritage Foundation. She had an epic battle on Capitol Hill not too long ago with Congresswoman Katie Porter over the impact of some of the Democratic legislation to rein in guns. The Congresswoman kind of suggested that Amy gave false testimony. Amy didn't take it sitting down. She fought right back. And she's also doing some really great analysis of just where the state of the Second Amendment is, what Democrats are trying to do it, what solutions aren't being talked about that could be beneficial to mass violence, like the shooting in Uvalde or the shooting in Buffalo, and the under-over on raising red flags on the red flag gun laws, those laws that allow someone's guns to be taken away if one believes they pose a threat. She is really remarkably leading the argument, much more than the NRA has been recently. She also is a big advocate for the growing number of women who are gun owners, Second Amendment champions. That's a big growth area in the Second Amendment, is women with guns. And so, especially in this high crime era that we live in. So we're going to ask her about all of those things. And then we're going to throw to an interview we first did last night on the TV show, Just the News, Not Noise, Kevin Brock, the great intelligence chief of the FBI. He worked for Robert Mueller back in the day. He was the guy that came in after 9/11 and reoriented the FBI on how to not only solve crimes, but to prevent terror attacks. It's a different mindset. And there were all of these legal hurdles that existed before 9/11 in sharing intelligence in a way that it might actually result in stopping a terror attack. It was really the undercurrent of the failures of the FBI and CIA when they had all the elements of the 9/11 plot but failed to connect the dots and put it together. This is the man that actually put those processes into place. He looks at the new documentation that we've gotten for Capitol Police and tells us whether, looking in hindsight, armchair quarterbacking, the Capitol Police had enough of the intelligence to prevent the attack, the rioting that occurred on January 6, 2021, you're going to really be surprised what he has to say. He has some very strong thoughts about just how actionable the intelligence was that the Capitol Police got. A great interview and a lot of food for thought as we head into the weekend. The Democrats are putting on a big sideshow, and it's distracting from this argument, this piece of information, which is what could have been done better to protect the Capitol? Were the security and intelligence failures that preceded January 6th? It's a discussion Democrats don't want to have. It's a discussion Americans need to have. Otherwise, our Capitol will be as unsafe the next time as it was on January 6th. That is a bad thing. That's why we've been writing these stories and providing you the facts out there that you've been getting from Just the News and the John Solomon Reports podcast. So let's go take a quick commercial break. When we come back, up first, Amy Swearer, followed by Kevin Brock from the FBI, former FBI intelligence chief. You're going to love two big interviews, one on the Second Amendment, one on the January 6th riots, both of them meaningful heading into this great weekend, Father's Day weekend. In fact, to everyone, have a happy Father's Day early, men, gentlemen, fathers, Thank you for raising your children. Thank you to my dad, Jack, who gave me an incredible lifetime of opportunity by raising me so especially. Happy Father's Day. All right, let's go take that commercial break. We'll be back first with Amy Swearer, legal fellow at the Edwin Meese Center for Legal and Judicial Studies at the Heritage Foundation. She's up first right after this commercial break. Folks, if you owe back taxes, fair warning, you're not going to like this. The IRS is mailing millions of pay-up letters. Millions, I say. Then it's up to the 20,000 new IRS enforcement agents to find you. Why the IRS targets you and not millionaires? Well, because millionaires have tax lawyers. You don't. You'll pay up. Plus interest and penalties. You need Tax Network USA, and you need them now. Tax Network USA has brilliant war room strategies to solve your IRS problems quickly and in your favor. Like a preferred direct line to the IRS, they know which agents to deal with and who to avoid. It's not all bad news for you because Tax Network USA learned of a special limited time IRS offer. They're willing to waive $1 billion in penalties if you qualify. So schedule your free confidential consultation to see if you qualify for this limited time IRS penalty canceling offer. To do so, call 1-800-245-6000. That's 1-800-245-6000 or visit tnusa.com/justnews. That's tnusa.com/justnews. Folks, Field of Greens is the healthiest thing I do every day, and I want you on this journey with me. Why? It's literally one scoop a day. It tastes great. I love the fruit flavors particularly, and it's completely improved my life and my health. This is nutrition the way nature intended. When I began taking a hard look at why I wasn't feeling good and why I felt unhealthy, why I was gaining weight, why I was losing energy, it wasn't just because I had hit my 50s. No, it was because I wasn't getting the right amount of fruit and vegetables in my diet. And listen, I'm just too busy to go to the store, clean up the vegetables, cook vegetable dinners, and make sure I hit the fruit. A Field of Greens stepped in. One scoop of powder in my drink or on my eggs in the morning, and boom, I was off and feeling better. And suddenly, I was losing weight. I was sleeping better. My metabolism went up. My blood sugar went down. My cholesterol went down, and my weight went down. And my doctor said, hey, whatever you're doing, keep it doing. You know what that is? It's Field of Greens. That's what I've been doing. Field of Greens is radically different. Each organic fruit and vegetable was medically chosen to support heart and vital organ health. I trust Field of Greens to keep me healthy. I promise you, you're going to love this product. But if for any reason you don't, they'll give you 100% money back guarantee. Now, you're going to get 15% off your first order, plus free rush shipping because of the incredible partnership we have here at Just the News with Brick House Nutrition, and of course, Field of Greens. All you got to do to take advantage of this offer, visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code JustNews. That's promo code JustNews at fieldofgreens.com. Don't wait. Go to fieldofgreens.com today. Use the promo code JustNews for 15% off. All right, folks, welcome back from the commercial break. Really excited to have this next guest on the show for the first time. She has been one of the most cogent voices on the Second Amendment for a long time. She's a legal fellow at the Edwin Meese Center for Legal and Judicial Studies at the Heritage Foundation. And you probably saw her on YouTube and Rumble last week. She had an epic showdown with Congresswoman Katie Porter over what Democrats have been saying about gun legislation. Joining me right now, Amy Swearer. Amy, great to have you on the show.
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
I want to start with this extraordinary moment. You're testifying. A Democratic Congresswoman, Katie Porter, comes after you from California and essentially accuses you of lying about a statement that I think was factually true. Tell us a little bit about what happened at that House Oversight and Reform Committee hearing.
Yeah, so this was a House Oversight and Reform Committee hearing just broadly about, you know, all manner of gun control. And I mean, really no focus to it other than to just sort of, you know, talk about how horrific some of these recent shootings have been. And here's all of the gun control now, you know, how dare you, you know, push back in any way, shape or form. You know, and at some point, you expect this to be contentious when you go as a witness to hearings like this. But what I did not have on my congressional hearing bingo card was being literally accused of perjury about a hearing from 3 years ago. So Congresswoman Porter, you know, rather than focus on any of the issues, on anything that any witness, including myself, had said that day or any of the bills pending before the House, you know, currently in this session, she brought up just a part of a question I had answered 3 years ago during testimony about just a quote assault weapons generally. And she sort of took it out of context and you know, not sort of kind of accused me of perjury, but literally accused me of perjury, of lying under oath, which is a very serious allegation. That is not something you just sort of flippantly throw out there. And so, of course, you know, I rushed to defend myself. She smartly reclaimed her time because this was never about whether or not I had committed perjury. Of course I had not. You know, this was about getting her little soundbite, you know, her little clickbaity video because she's up for re-election this year. And I think it's unfortunate, but it's also very indicative of sort of the thrust of this hearing. It was not serious. It was not about serious solutions.
Nope.
It was always about clickbait.
Yeah. Soundbites, clickbait, and fundraising material, right? Because they fundraise off of these moments in the hearings. I thought in your column, you made a very cogent point, which is, you know, she said, the time belongs to me. She reclaimed her time. You said it really didn't belong to her, and it didn't belong to you either. It really belongs to the victims of unspeakable tragedy. That's the problem here. All of this politics that is going on in these hearings, none of it actually is going to make life any better for the people whose lives have already been lost or whose families have been affected by lost lives. How frustrating is it that Congress can't have serious conversations anymore?
Well, it's incredibly frustrating. You know, I think it should be frustrating for everybody, but, you know, there is a sense when, you know, as I said in my opening for that hearing, you know, this is now more than a handful of times that I've been called to testify before various, you know, state and federal legislatures after these mass shootings. And they are horrific. They are devastating toward communities. But we keep having the same conversations. It's not that there's something new being added to the conversations. It's the same policy proposals that still have the same constitutional and practical problems that they did last year and the year before that, and that unfortunately they're going to have the same problems next year and the year after that when we keep getting called back, because they're not designed to get at the root of the problem. They're not designed to even function in a serious manner against gun violence, even if you could enforce them, which many of them you really can't. So it's just frustrating because it's you know, it's as in Ecclesiastes, right? There's truly nothing new under the sun, and it just keeps getting more frustrating. And I think the American people deserve better. They deserve serious conversations about the real problems.
Yeah, and they're just not getting it anymore. I mean, I came to town 30 years ago, and back in those days, even if there was a gun debate, it was serious, and both sides got their point, got to make their point. Facts were involved, and now it's all about emotion and scripted moments and in political nonsense. I wanna zero in on something that I think is getting a lot of attention right now. There are some Republicans that appear to be gravitating this way, and that is red flag laws. There's a lot of states that have them. You have some concerns about the due process elements of red flag laws. Tell us a little bit what concerns you about this idea.
Sure. So I want to start off by saying, you know, red flag laws at least start from addressing a serious problem, which is that when you look at people who commit suicide, and specifically people who commit mass public shootings, they are almost always, with perhaps one exception for mass public shooters, capable of passing background checks despite, you know, very clearly being a danger to themselves or others. And that some of that has to do with the ways that our laws are currently written. And so red flag laws are sort of this attempt to get at this group of people who are dangerous but may not be diagnosably mentally ill or haven't yet committed a felony, to sort of say, how do we get them help and you know, make sure that they don't have lethal means readily accessible to them. The problem has become, when you look at the 20 states that have enacted these laws, yes, some of them are less objectionable than others, but none of them have really done a great job of, you know, ensuring adequate due process, ensuring that people are being, you know, pointed in the direction of help, so that it's not just about disarming them, but getting them help. They haven't, you know, universally done a great job of sort of the practical aspects of notification, who is storing the guns, how do you get your guns back? You know, how do we make sure that people's identities are protected and this isn't being held against them for years on end? And it's the same problem that is going to continue to exist. I think, you know, we don't have language yet for any sort of proposed federal red flag law out of the Senate, you know, for at least from a theoretical standpoint, going to be very difficult for Congress to, you know, pass this sort of language that states can just copy and paste regardless of, you know, which state it is under what circumstances, that are going to really have robust due process protections and the comprehensive nature that these laws need. And, you know, you sort of have to assume at that point in Congress that that's what states are going to do if they want that money. They're just going to copy and paste and say this is sufficient. And I don't know how Congress can actually come up with that language that can just be copied and pasted for any state. And at that point, again, it just becomes problematic to incentivize states to do just that.
Yeah, that's going to be the trick. And I know a lot of people, including the NRA, said, hey, we're going to wait to see what the language is before we weigh on this. But I think the devil's always in the detail on these things. Despite that effort, and despite there's some bipartisanship and some, you know, I think well-intentioned, though maybe not well-researched yet, ideas on the table in Congress, you have wrote, I think, one of the most important articles written in the last month on this issue, and that is, we already have effective gun violence solutions, we just won't listen to them or use them. Tell us a little bit about that column and the solutions that are really at our fingertips right now if we want to go execute them.
Yeah, so this is actually the written submission that I gave to the House that I, you know, was hoping they would read and take seriously. And it goes hand in hand with a similar submission that will be published shortly that I gave to the Senate about school safety in particular. So one of the big things, and this is something I was on a different on a Senate panel about a week after the House panel.
Right.
And you know, I was sitting with a chief of police who said some of the same things that I've been saying in this first point, which is, you need state and federal prosecutors to take crime seriously under existing laws. And unfortunately, too many cities, this generally falls to state and local governments, but these state and local counterparts have oftentimes, you know, while singling out the rights of peaceable gun owners, turn around and don't fully hold violent criminals accountable for their actions. And that's problematic. It incentivizes and encourages criminals to continue behaving in certain ways. So we need to crack down on those laws that actually exist. And that's just not happening. And again, this isn't to say police are not doing their jobs. A lot of times these are progressive prosecutors who are not fully enforcing the law. And so that's the first thing we need to look at. But there are a lot of other things. You know, we talk about school safety. Our kids are actually remarkably safe at school. I know sometimes it doesn't feel like it, but we need to talk about how to make them safer. Right now, schools have over $100 billion in COVID-19 relief funds that it's already been given to them. So I think Congress needs to allow those funds, now that the pandemic is winding down, to use them for school security, to talk about, you know, the physical security of schools, armed responses, investing in the short term in, you know, licensed mental health practitioners who can help when these kids are becoming very dangerous to themselves or others, being able to intervene. These are incredibly important to prevent atrocities like what we saw in Uvalde, where a single locked, and I guess in that point, unlocked door was the difference between 21 people dying or going home.
Yep.
But these are the things that people don't want talk about, or at least not, you know, at a congressional level, because it's unpopular. It doesn't sell as well as saying, well, let's just take all the guns. But it would be incredibly, incredibly effective. You know, it's the same thing for funding anti-gang violence measures, for investing in the nation's mental health structure, promoting safe storage and responsible gun ownership without, you know, turning around and imposing criminal burdens on gun owners or hindering their ability to make reasonable decisions or respond immediately. Those sorts of things can be incredibly helpful. And it's not gun control. It's more getting at the root of the problem and encouraging and incentivizing it.
Yeah. There's so much effort to want to blame the weapon, but it's always the human behind the weapon that is the real risk and the real opportunity. And one of the things I know you mentioned, and this is something I heard a lot of after 9/11 in the FBI community, which is we need to do better risk assessment and we need to have better training for risk assessment so we can make good calls on people who might actually be moving towards a violent act versus someone who's simply practicing their constitutional duty. Why is that so important in this scenario today, in the culture we're in today?
Well, you know, as you said, Most of these targeted acts of mass violence, whether it's Buffalo, whether it's Uvalde, they involve people who were clearly dangerous. And what you see is a breakdown somewhere along the line of the chain of reporting. Either someone didn't recognize that as a sign that it's problematic or poses a threat, or when they report it to someone, you know, it's not taken seriously, or there's not some sort of, you know, official mechanism to intervene. And this is something that the federal government actually does really well. You look at some of these federal agencies, they have experts in behavioral threat assessment.
They do.
We don't really have that at a state and local level or within our schools. You know, you look at what Florida did after Parkland with some of their behavioral threat assessment teams that they have set up in schools. So part of this is taking what we know works at a federal level and investing in a state and local level. And this is regardless of whatever other laws you have. This is not about red flag laws. You know, this is helping people identify threats. And when you do that, you also help them identify things that are not threats so that they can suss out the difference, you know, between someone who might be a school shooter and someone who, you know, is just, you know, the MAGA hat wearing neighbor who has an NRA bumper sticker and, you know, your other neighbor doesn't like him. And, you know, now he's getting accused of being a threat. It helps suss out those different things when you have people at that level who know what to look for, who know what is and is not a threat and what to do about it and how to set up those mechanisms so that they're in place when this happens.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt about it. You write often for the Daily Signal. I think one of the things that the Daily Signal does so well at the Heritage Foundation is provide real life examples of people, good people, lawfully using their gun in a defensive situation that almost always saves lives. And a lot of the more recent ones I know have involved women. You had a very powerful column, I think, back in April, 10 incidents highlight the importance of Second Amendment for women. Why don't these get more attention? Why don't Republicans in Congress do more to call attention to this? Why don't they get an equal hearing in the congressional debates that are going on right now?
Well, I think, you know, part of it is it's not within the national consciousness. I think a lot of people just truly do not understand how often Americans are using their lawfully owned firearms to defend themselves or others. So that the stories that we publish, and you can see a lot more of them if you go to the Heritage Defensive Gun Use Database. I'm hoping to get that updated by early next week with stories from the last month. It's just the tip of the iceberg. You know, these are the ones that you can find in a Google search if you know sort of what to Google for. But, you know, it's often just part of it is it's the atrocities that didn't happen. Right. It's much less, sexy from a media standpoint if, well, you know, the homeowner didn't die and just held the guy at gunpoint. Right. Because it's the story that doesn't happen. It's the crimes that are prevented. But, you know, we're talking about 500,000 to 3 million times a year that this happens. And this is not me. This is not the NRA or GOA saying this. This comes from the CDC in 2013 under the Obama administration, looking at all of these studies on this and saying, yeah, you know, almost every major study on this says it's between 500,000 to 3 million times a year. I think the average is probably about a million. And that's far, far more often than guns are used for violent crimes to perpetuate crimes against people. And it's such an important part of this conversation. It is exactly why we have a Second Amendment. The Second Amendment is premised on that natural inalienable right of self-defense and giving it teeth so that you actually have a meaningful defense, not just a defense on paper, but you have the actual practical ability to defend your other rights and liberties, whether it's against criminals or against invading armies or against tyrants. That is why we have it. And it works. We know that it works. We see in the data that it works. And we should not be going after these law-abiding, peaceable citizens who are not the problem.
Yeah, the wrong target. Wrong target becomes the wrong solution. And I think that's so amazing to watch this. You have been so astute in kind of predicting where this has been going and what debates need to be happening. What should we be watching for over the next couple of months as bellwether signs of where Second Amendment issues are coming up? We've got a big ruling about to come out at the Supreme Court, we think. We've got, you know, this bipartisan deal kind of hatching in Congress. What are the most important bellwether signs we should be looking for the Second Amendment?
Well, I think you've just mentioned two of them. You know, it will be important to see sort of what comes out of in terms of actual language from this bipartisan framework and whether that actually ends up getting passed and whether if it does get passed, whether the Democrats in the House would, you know, consider it beneath them to pass it because it's, you know, it's not banning the AR-15.
Yeah.
So that'll be interesting. This public carry case out of New York. We should be getting that case any day now. You know, and for a lot of Americans, you know, who live in the majority of states that already allow you to bear arms in self-defense in public, it may not make much of a difference. But for millions of Americans in, you know, the 8 or 9 states that currently don't allow that, it's going to make a world of difference. I think it is very clear that the court took this case, that there will be a majority of justices who affirm that the Second Amendment means what it says, that it's not just to keep, but to bear arms, that you do have a right to bear arms in public for self-defense. And so you will see states having to at least have some mechanism of allowing that. And that's going to be huge for millions of Americans who currently don't have that. And then I think it will be important to see what the court does next. So after Heller and McDonald in 2008 and 2010, they just sort of let states do whatever they wanted and let lower courts, you know, run amok for 10 years before we got to this. And so I think it will be important to see if the court wants to continue to be serious about this, if they're going to take on things like states that have assault bans on, quote, assault weapons,
right?
You know, states that ban possession for individuals under 21. I think that will be important. What does the court do next?
Yeah, it is enormously important. And I think watching that, a lot of people will be watching and reading. It is interesting that the word choice does matter, right? They didn't say the right to keep arms. They said the right to bear arms. And I think we're going to get the potential for the clearest definition of what the courts believe the founding fathers meant with that in this ruling. This seems to be the big ruling to flush that out. You are doing such amazing work, Amy. How do people stay in touch with all that you're doing? What's the best way to follow your work?
Well, you can always follow me on Twitter if you have it. It's just at Amy Swearer, so at first name, last name. You can always read what we're doing either at heritage.org or at our sort of more media arm of Heritage, which is thedailysignal.com. But you know, everything I do there will almost certainly end up on Twitter at some point. So if you're okay with occasional cat pictures and sports hot takes, follow me on Twitter.
I think most people are. Yeah, that's great. Well, listen, you're doing such important work. So many people were stunned to watch the way the Congresswoman treated you last week. And that video went viral for all the right reasons. And it's good to see that we can have a good conversation, a civil conversation with facts and ideas, because there's a lot of them that you're putting into the public domain that would really, really help this country. So, Amy, thanks so much for your time today. Great to have you on the show, and have a great weekend.
Thank you for having me. You as well.
Thank you. All right, folks, we're going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, the former intelligence director of the FBI, Kevin Brock, is going to join us to tell us about what he sees and all that information we've published at Just the News. The Capitol Police had so much intelligence warning of January 6th. We're going to have the discussion whether it was avoidable or not right after this commercial break.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about all from the comfort of your home isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Welcome back, everybody. We are delighted to welcome back to the program Kevin Brock. He's the former FBI Assistant Director of Intelligence. We love getting your insight, Kevin. Thank you so much for joining us again.
Well, thank you, Amanda. It's always a pleasure to be with you. Thanks.
Well, I am very proud that John is my co-host because he continues to report on aspects surrounding January 6th, the latest that there was at least 2 weeks worth of warnings before January 6th, information about there were maps online on the Donald.win, which is a subreddit forum with private membership, people posting information about explosives that they planned on bringing, all of these things that are very, very concerning, stuff that you would think would be important to know on January 6th, and yet there seemed to have been a breakdown in communication somewhere along that chain. I want to get your initial reaction.
Yeah, this is a little disheartening, and again, I'll preface my remarks by saying, you know, we have benefit of 2020 hindsight, and we don't know all the facts. However, this is a little bit distressing because what they John has uncovered is information that landed in the laps of Capitol Hill Police 2 weeks prior, not a day prior, but 2 weeks prior, with great specificity. This is what we call in the intelligence world actionable intelligence. That's the main goal. That's what every intelligence professional wants to develop and analyze, is intelligence that informs decision makers about something that they can take action on. A lot of intelligence we get is a little bit murky. You're not sure where it's going to happen, when it's going to happen, who's involved, and you're running around trying to protect everything. But when you have actionable intelligence, it gives you a level of specificity of details to where you can take steps to help prevent a bad thing from happening. That's what we all want. That's what we're all looking for. So when you come across information that looks like the Capitol Hill Police had actionable intelligence with great specificity, we know when the event's taking place, we've got these bad actors talking about it on the internet, they're publishing schematics of the Capitol, the tunnel system, and everything else, that is a huge warning signal to any law enforcement or intelligence entity that they have to take steps to prepare. So why it broke down from there, I'm sure we're going to find out. This probably, this one bit of information probably deserves its own hearings to find out why proper steps weren't taken well in advance of the January 6th events.
Yeah, such a great point. Kevin, I don't know if a lot of people know this about you, but I know because I got to watch it firsthand as a reporter. You came in the aftermath of 9/11 and really helped retrain the FBI from its normal job of solving crimes after they happen to creating a proactive way of preventing terrorist attacks, reading intelligence with the idea that we're going to stop something, not solve a crime. You single-handedly transformed. You played a big role with the men you worked with, men, women you worked with, to change that mentality. When you look back at this, does the Capitol Police, does it kind of look like the FBI of 2000 and 2001?
Well, first of all, let me thank you for those compliments, but I'll disabuse you of one notion. I didn't single-handedly do anything.
No, it's a good group, I know.
But we were obviously after 9/11 charged with creating a culture of intelligence gathering analysis to what I just spoke about before, to provide insights into possible actionable intelligence that we can, so where we can take steps to prevent bad things from happening. Now, the FBI always wanted to prevent bad things from happening. I had a number of cases as an agent where we stopped terrorism before it occurred. However, the big difference was the development of that intelligence wasn't always shared efficiently. It wasn't always shared with the people who had the right to know about that intelligence. We have created by design a stovepiped law enforcement intelligence community in this country as a means of protecting the populace against one centralized, huge intelligence apparatus like the KGB or something like that. So in a sense, it's wise policy to have separate agencies, but in another sense, it creates a situation where you have agencies developing intelligence and it's not always shared efficiently. We saw that obviously in spades during 9/11. That created a lot of change, that created the impetus for pushing out intelligence bulletins broadly to those who need it. So we have an instance here where it looks like the Capitol Hill Police received intelligence from the Department of Homeland Security, from other elements within the Washington, D.C. law enforcement community that gave them intelligence that should have been acted on. Now, there's usually two reasons why that fails. Number one, the people who receive it don't recognize it for its seriousness and its value. Maybe you're inexperienced and they don't get the information out on a timely basis. The second is, and this is kind of unlikely in this situation, the second is that law enforcement and intelligence community are often inundated with information about different threats. And it's kind of the cry wolf scenario where you start wondering whether is this real or not. In this instance, with this amount of specificity and knowing that an event's coming up on January 6th, this should have been treated more seriously than it looks like it was.
Yeah. And Kevin, you know, the FBI is a storied institution, but I think it looks very different than it did when you were at the FBI. I think that its reputation and the culture within the FBI has drastically changed, and the American people have lost faith in the entire intelligence community, not only because of January 6th, but of course the supposed kidnapping attempt of Gretchen Whitmer. Is there any way to right the ship? Because it seems awfully like the tentacles of corruption within the FBI are so deep that it might be a situation where we have to scrap it.
Yeah, I've always, Amanda, I've always argued against that. I certainly, because of the legacy of James Comey, Andrew McCabe, and Peter Strzok, the FBI suffered a tremendous blow. And it lost the faith and confidence of 50% of America because of the way that they handled the whole Trump-Russia made-up collusion narrative that crippled the FBI. I resist the idea that corruption runs deep in the FBI. There are many, many challenges that they're going to have to overcome. However, I will say that the FBI and Department of Justice has to do a better job at reassuring the American people that they are acting in a nonpartisan way. DOJ, we see problems with that, frankly, with the way they're, they reacted against parents and school boards, so the way they reacted against journalists up in New York that were, you know, supposedly harboring the president's daughter's diary. All of these things shakes the confidence of the American people that justice is being administered in an even-handed, objective way. That's the most precious thing that the FBI owns. They are going to have to strive on a daily basis to make sure that those perceptions don't exist. And where they do exist, they should be transparent, come out, address them head on, and make those reassurances. If they don't, then they deserve the reputation that they're going to have to live with.
Yeah, that's a great point, Kevin. We got about 45 seconds left. You see the problems here in the Capitol Police. There could be hearings on this. What's the most important thing that you would tell the Capitol Police? Hey, guys, this is what I would focus on. I've got about 40 seconds left.
The Capitol Hill Police are obviously, a lot of people didn't even know about the Capitol Hill Police. They just assumed police department run by Washington, D.C., monitor the hill. So, you know, now they've come into focus. They're 600 strong. They're a large agency. They've got tremendously valuable assets to protect, not just the heritage of our capital, but the people who work there, and they need that protection. Their role is tremendously important. They have to take it seriously, and I think this will probably engender a lot of policy changes within Capitol Hill Police in the years to come.
We're going to have to leave it there just because we're about to hit a break. Thank you for joining us, sir. Folks, we'll be right back after this commercial break.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe, now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
All All right, folks, welcome back for the commercial break. So glad you can join us. Two great interviews. Big thanks to Amy. Big thanks to Kevin for some pretty thoughtful, insightful, cutting-edge information. That's why we do this show, to get you inside the news, get you facts, let you make up your own mind. We're not trying to make up your mind for you. We're trying to get you the facts that you can make a good, educated decision on what's going on in Washington, going on in this country. And I think that that's one of the most important things that we can contribute to the debate here. Hey, before we go, I want to give everybody another just opportunity that comes our way because of the incredible partnerships that Just the News and John Solomon Reports is lucky to have. One of our longtime partners have been with us almost from the beginning, Birch Gold Group. You know them. You hear Philip Patrick on our show all the time. He is, I think, one of the most important economic analysts in the country. He's a gold specialist, of course, from the Birch Gold Group. So think about this. I was just absorbing this last night. Some of the greatest blue chip companies of modern America, Amazon, well, its value is down 37% in the last year. Tesla, it's down 40%. Cryptos have been slammed and dropping in value, so cryptocurrencies. And many fear that the hawkish moves by the Fed is too late to slow inflation, but will stall the economy, create that scenario that we call stagflation. So do you have a plan to survive that? Are you thinking about that? Because if you're not, you're going to see a big reduction in your economic value, your net worth, your assets. We are heading into a difficult time, according to all the folks. In fact, there was a great story on Just the News this morning, a survey of the big CEOs in America. Almost all of them think we are headed into recession, if not full stagflation. So it's a good time for you, maybe, to diversify into gold, the most stable asset in the history of the world. And Birch Gold Group is the company I trust to help you convert an IRA or 401k into an IRA in gold and silver. I bet you didn't know that you can move some of your retirement assets and protect them with the great value of gold and precious metals. Gold and silver. That's really the most important thing. Now, here's how you get started. You want to get the incredible no obligation info kit that Birch Gold Group has created. All you got to do is text the word Just News to 989899. Let me give you that again. Text the word Just News, one word, to 989898 and get your free no obligation info kit on gold from the Birch Gold Group. They are the precious metals professionals. I trust them enough to buy from them. Text Just News 989898, and you will be able to start to secure your retirement savings right away. One more time, text the word Just News to 989898. It's pretty easy to remember. All right, guys, on the show tonight, Congressman Brian Babin's going to be on. Charlie Kirk is going to be on from TPUSA. We're going to have a good discussion about border security, all the things that are going on in the world today. And this weekend, we've got an all-star lineup for Sunday. Some of the best interviews we did from the TV show earlier in the week. We've got Mike Huckabee is on the show, the former governor of Arkansas and soon to be, I think, the father of the next governor of Arkansas, Sarah Sanders. We've got Congresswoman Claudia Tenney on. We've got the Attorney General from Texas, Ken Paxton. He's doing some really important stuff. Harriet Hageman, well, she's running against Liz Cheney and has a lot to say about what we broke about the Capitol security breach. And finally, of course, we've got the great senator from Kentucky. I'm talking about Mitch McConnell. I'm talking about Rand Paul. Rand Paul's here. He had some really prescient things to talk about in bringing down government spending, balancing the budget. He put the six-penny plan into action last week. It's a very important, thoughtful plan. We get a chance to talk to him about that. That's pretty cool, isn't it? All right, folks, have a great weekend. Fathers and dads everywhere, mine included, Jack Solomon. Happy Father's Day. Thank you for what you do to make a difference in your children's life. I know my dad made a profound difference, and he still makes a profound difference to this day. All right, folks, everybody have a great weekend. Listen in on Sunday. You won't be disappointed. God bless you, and God bless this incredible country, the United States, as he always has. You've been listening to John Solomon Reports, a podcast from Just the News. At Just the News, we break the stories others in the media ignore or are too afraid to tell. We did it on Russia collusion, Hunter Biden, and the security and intelligence failures that preceded January 6th. Our stories have real impact and reach because we stick to the facts. I'm John Solomon. You can help me expand our honest, unvarnished, and unbiased reporting by becoming a premium member at Just the News. You'll get an ad-free experience and exclusive member-only access to events, and you'll be helping us dig up more truth. Join today at justthenews.com/subscribe.
Hey,
Hey there, it's Amanda Head, and I am thrilled to introduce to you my new exciting podcast, Furthermore with Amanda Head, broadcasting weekly from sunny Los Angeles, California, and brought to you by the dynamic Just the News Podcast Network. On this fresh and engaging podcast, I delve into the latest news with a little bit of a twist, exploring the furthermore of every story. But this isn't your typical run-of-the-mill news commentary or politically charged program. I interview a diverse range of guests, including business leaders, entertainers, musicians, educators, experts, politicians, and many influential figures from both the United States and around the world. So why not make your Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays a little more interesting? Tune in on your preferred podcast platform and discover Furthermore with Amanda Head on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. And don't forget to hit that follow or subscribe button and be sure to download the latest episodes. I can't wait to have you join me on this exciting journey.